All right. Day number three. You can be seated. I like this place. Don't you think we ought to do like youth pastor swap for a month or something? Should we do youth pastor swap? I'll take you guys for a month. Brother Hassie can have mine for a month. Yes? You can't handle me, I don't think. Brother Hassie's so nice. I used to think I was like the meanest man in the world until I met Brian Hassie. But we're both very driven men. And very driven men tend to have a little bit more drive. How many of you are going to Christmas lights tonight? Raise your hand. Wow. Okay. How many of you girls have a sympathy date tonight? I mean, you're just going with the guy because you feel sorry for him. All right, good. How many of you guys are going with a girl just because you feel sorry for her? All right, okay. How many of you, hang on, listen. How many of you know that the girl that you really like is going with some other guy and you'll just meet up with her up there in Chicago? Raise your hand. Yeah, okay. Oh, that's so... Alex, did you raise your hand? No, you're hopeless and dateless, bro. All right? Are you going tonight, Alex? Are you going tonight? Are you going tonight? Okay, good. Who would go with you? I mean, no. Who's the lady going with you? I don't know who Bernard is, but that's funny. All right? Who's Bernard? Oh, Bernard. Bernard, oh. Bernard got a little color to him. All right. Okay. It's all right. I like a little color. Have you seen my wife? My wife's got a little color. Yeah. My wife's like your color. All right. So I don't mind a little color. All right. Ebony and ivory. Who you taking? For real. Not Bernard. I know that's who you want to take, but I mean, for real. Who you want? Oh, you are? Okay. Is it that girl in front? That poor girl? All right. Where's Joey at? Chavez. All right, you've been paid for. I gave your money to Tony Ibarra. So you and, what's the girl's name? Isabella. I was going to say Jezebella, but Isabella. Where you at, Isabella? She's not here? She's probably going up to meet you in Chicago, right? Okay. I hope you have a good time. I'm from Chicago. Now, let me tell you something about being, I grew up all my life in Chicago. My parents, I was born in Puerto Rico, San Juan. Why in the world my parents ever came over? I'm going to slap my mother one day for moving. But they came here when I was about seven years old. And, of course, you know, my parents, they came here when we were six or seven. As soon as we became teenagers, they moved back and left us here in the cold. They've been back for years now. But growing up in Chicago, people think that if you're from Chicago, you're always downtown. Are you joking? No way. The only time you go to downtown, if you're from Chicago, is to go to court. That's the only reason, all right? You go to court, you go downtown. That's it. I mean, my BC and D teens, they never go to downtown. I have Christmas lights tomorrow night. We'll have, 100 and something kids go. But for them, it'll be the first time that many of them go downtown Chicago. And you talk about Navy Pier. My kids hate Navy Pier. If I were to announce and say, we're going to Navy Pier, they'd be like, boo. The reason is because a lot of my kids work at Navy Pier. So if you go, look for kids that look like they go to CB and ask, they work at the popcorn shop, Haagen-Dazs, they work at all the, so, be looking, say, do you work at CB? No, do you go to CB and see if you get a hookup, see if you get something free, all right? Free, all right? Not like my kids. No five-finger discount, all right? It's mine. Thank you, Jesus, okay? Take your Bibles, turn to Hebrews chapter 12, verse 15. I said on Monday that people come to faith three ways. They either have a godly heritage, they either are brought to the Lord, or in many cases, they have a need. There's a smack in their life that causes them to automatically say, okay, I need, look up here now. And by the way, you've been doing awesome. Sometimes people are like, oh, you're going to go preach over there? It's a tough place. I love it. I'm very comfortable here. And if I wasn't comfortable, I'd stay behind that pulpit the whole time and so on. But you've been good. You've been excellent. And I told you that people either come by faith because they are a godly heritage. Many of you are in that case. You are brought to faith talk about the eunuch being brought. He didn't know the gospel, and he was shown the gospel. Many of your parents probably were in that case. Third, I said you come because there's a need. There is some need. You be so either you have a death or there's some tragic incident in your life where it draws you to Christ. And that's how some people come to Christ. On Monday, I said that, you know, your faith is a lot. When you own it, you take possession of it. And because it's yours, you take care of it. And you tell everybody about it. And you want to make sure you protect it. And I gave the example of some of you guys having a car. I mean, you clean it every time you can. You only allow certain people in it. You drive it, you know, because it's yours. You don't drive it like a rental car. You don't drive it like it's stolen. And I encourage you on Monday to take possession of your faith. So many of us, we borrow our faith. It's grandma's or grandpa's, or it's, you know, Mr. Woosley's or Mr. Hess's. Can I tell you something? You can live off somebody else's faith for a little bit until something happens in your life where you need your own dose. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is I'm going to give you some illustrations in my own personal life. Now, I live by the philosophy, or I tell my wife this all the time, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. I mean, that's just my life. If it can go wrong, it will go wrong. I wish I was one of those people where everything was easy. But that's not how it's been for me. Now, I had to learn as a older teenager, 18 and 19, I had to learn that I had to deal with the fact that life is not fair. All right? Life is not fair. Now, there's some of you, you're short. And guess what? You're going to stay short. All right? I'm not looking at you. Eric, all right. Then some of you are tall, great, and you always get this, man, you're tall. Man, you know, some of you are thin, and you will always be thin. Some of you are not, all right? Some of you are, you know, you're very good looking. Some of you girls have great hair. Some of you girls, your hair looks thirsty, all right? Now, some of you girls, you know, you get the attention of the boys, and some of you girls, you don't get the attention of the boys. But life is not fair. Some of us have, you know, listen, some of us have a little bit more intellect than others. Some of us have better speaking ability, what have you. But life is not fair. And I learned that because, listen to me, throughout my life, life has not, you know, when I grow, I'm not a big, and I hate to say this, I'm not a big Christmas person. Okay? I know. I am the Grinch, bah humbug, I am. I get in a bad mood at Christmas time. Listen, growing up, we didn't have much of a Christmas. I remember a couple of times going to a Salvation Army to get a gift. And I remember, I tell people this, my wife's like, would you please don't tell this story. She says, no one believes you. You know, I was so poor, I used to play with my shoes. My shoes were like my cars. I mean, the black one was the cop car, the white one was the ambulance, you know, and it'd be chasing the boot. But I tell that story, my wife's like, that really didn't happen. I'll call, say, look, would you call my brother? Did you guys used to play with your shoes? Yeah, we were poor. I mean, you know, that's all I had. And so growing up, not having much, and so on, you know, there were times where I was like, you know, something's not right here, something's not fair. Read with me in Hebrews. I want to read Hebrews chapter 12, verse 15. Then yesterday I told you about those who opt out. They make a conscious choice to live a comfortable life. Those who zone out, they remain in church, and yet they lose their fire. Church becomes a ritual. Their faith becomes a ritual. It's just a matter of putting their time in. Then I talk about those who drop out. Usually those are those who will fall to a sin and will leave the faith. But of all those, the ones that drop out usually are the ones that come back. Bible says in Hebrews 12, 15, read with me, please. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God. Stop it there. It says, lest any man. Be careful that you think that because of your godly heritage or because of who you know or because of who knows you, be careful that you think you can't fall. I was at Pacific Garden Mission. Let me tell you what kind of youth pastor I am. About 4 or 5 years ago, I put these little question marks all over City Baptist, the hall. And I put secret activity. Secret activity. $5, Sunday best dressed. I said, we're having a secret activity. I got the nicer cruiser bus that the church owns. And I had drinks on there. And I had, you know, almost like we were going to a banquet. And I told her, I said, now look, we're going to go meet some very, very important people. I said, it's downtown. I said, it's $5. I'm just charging you for the fuel. The food is free, but you got to come well-dressed because we're going to go meet some very important people. Well, a lot of my kids knew that I worked downtown. A lot of my kids have known that from time to time, I'll take some of my high school boys up to where I used to work, the office, and I'll show them around. And it's on the 31st floor of the Citigroup Bank building there on Madison, and the view is phenomenal. And so I've taken kids up there. So they thought, well, Brother Rick's going to introduce us to maybe some of his business friends. So that day we loaded up the bus and 60 kids came out. Man, they were dressed. They had the nice suits on. The girls had the really, really nice dresses on. You know, we had drinks on the bus and having a great time. And I took the bus to the Pacific Garden Mission. Downtown Chicago, I didn't lie. Some very important people, I didn't lie. Going to have a free meal, I didn't lie. You say, what's the Pacific Garden Mission? The largest homeless mission in America. And I pulled that bus off, and all these kids were all nice and dressed. I said, where are we going? I said, we're going to have dinner with some homeless people tonight. And we went down into the cafeteria and sat there, and I divided them into tables, and the kids were hesitant to eat the meal. You know, it wasn't the best meal. I went by, I said, of course, I didn't eat, but I went by to every table. And I'm like, come on, isn't that good? Have some more. Come on, bring. And man, the kids were eating, you know. And I didn't lie. There were some very important people. And I taught them a lesson that night, that it's not about you. It's not about who you think you are or who you know or where you come from. So be very, very careful as we read this verse. Don't you ever think, well, you know, I'm never going to fall. In that meeting that night, I got up and spoke. And a man came up afterwards. He said, you wouldn't know me. He said, but let me tell you who I am. He said, my name is so-and-so, and he gave me his name. Very sharp-looking black man in his mid-40s. He said, at one time, I was an assistant attorney general in Washington, D.C. He said, I used to work under the first Bush presidency there. He said, I just come out of college. He said, I went there as an intern. He said, and I was an assistant attorney general. He said, but he said, I was also a cocaine addict. He said, I was a crack and a meth addict. He said, I wound up on the streets of Washington, D.C. He said, my sister in Chicago finally got a hold of me, gave me a ticket on Amtrak, brought me to Chicago, and I've been in this mission now for over a year, and I'm clean, and I want you to know. He said, I want you to know not everybody in here is just a wino or a bum. This man had it all. Bible says, look diligently, lest any man fail of the grace, lest any root, read that part with me, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. I want to talk to you this morning on things that will shake your faith. Things that will shake your faith. Now, for everyone in here, it's going to be different. I'm going to tell you my personal examples of three things that have shaken my faith. Three times that I've had to stop and I've had to ask myself, do I go any further? Do I just quit it here? Do I stop here? Because let me tell you something. Everybody in here, you're going to have your moment of your faith being shaken. Yes, you are. Now, everything's good now. Fellas, you're strong. Fellas, you guys played last night, had a good game, you won, your biceps are strong, you feel strong. Ladies, you're pretty. I've known many a young man throughout my life, and also as being a youth pastor, I've seen many a strong man now in a wheelchair. I've seen many a pretty young lady now deal her life to illness. So as a young person, we've got this utopia that, you know what? It's always going to be great for me. Got news for you. No, it's not. All right? No, it's not. Your day's coming. Now, one of the main reasons people have their faith shaken and lose their faith is because they allow bitterness into their life. They allow little events, little things. For the most part, they allow other people to shake them up. I'm going to give you a couple of real quick examples of things in my life that have made me second guess my faith. Let's talk about those that we work with or those that invest in your life. Let's talk about your leadership. Growing up, Brother Tim, I was reminded of something. When I was a teenager, you worked down in the teen center with us. You worked down in Sunday school. I remember playing softball in the afternoon program with you and I think your brother and some other fellows. I don't know if it was you or your brother one time, I think, got knocked unconscious coming in the home plate, right? I think I was the guy that smacked you. All right, but I remember that. That was a long time ago. And, you know, looking back, one of the things you're going to see is that you're going to look toward people that you love and who love you, and they're human too. You know that? They're human too. I don't have a halo. I don't have angels surrounding me. I don't have any kind of like a special spiritual power that you don't have. No. You know, I'll be honest with you. I like rough people. I like rough kids. You know, if your iPod today has got more worldly songs than it does, you know, the teen choir CD, guess what? I might like you a little better. I like rough kids. Rough kids don't bother me. You know, it's like this. Growing up in the city, I could take you to any part of Chicago where there's gang members and whatever, and it doesn't bother me one bit. Not one bit, but Jared, not one bit. Take me to Cabrini Green. Take me over to the Algol Gardens. I could walk around. No problem. I'm not scared. Now, put me in the country. That's a different story. Put me in the country on some country road where all you see is trailer. You know what? I get scared. Well, it's like horror movies. You know, like Nightmare on what? Elm Street. There ain't no Elm Street in Chicago. There's not. You ever notice all these horror movies? They only have one sheriff. I got one policeman, one sheriff, and it always happens by a lake. Well, guess what? The only lake in Chicago I know is Lake Michigan. It's too big. Stuff doesn't happen there. And we have more than one sheriff. We have more than one cop. So it's not the city I'm scared of. I'm scared of the little tiny towns. If I go to some little tiny town to preach, guess what? I stay in the hotel room the entire time. Why? Because you got Bubba out there. And them Bubbas are dangerous. Them Bubbas know how to shoot guns. And when them Bubbas look at your license and see your first name's Enrique, that bothers Bubba. Bubba thinks you don't belong here because your name's Enrique and your last name's Torre. What kind of name is that? I don't know. Let me loose. Let me go. So I'm not scared of the city. It's the little, you know, little country places that I'm scared of. But young people, going back to people in your life who are not, there's no supernatural power. We're just common folk. Listen to me. You are going to have leaders in your life that are going to disappoint you. Listen to this. My seventh grade teacher, Sunday school, no longer in the ministry. Eighth grade Sunday school teacher, no longer in the ministry. Ninth grade Sunday school teacher, divorced, no longer in the ministry. Guys over there, I appreciate you talking. Appreciate you laughing. I can see it all, okay? Sit up there, Papa. Sit up there. Can you sit up there? There you go. Papa's a Puerto Rican thing for like, you know, like you're cool. Papa, sit up. All right. 10th grade, 9th and 10th were the same. 11th and 12th, Sunday school teacher, no longer in the ministry, divorced. Bus captain brought me to church, no longer in the ministry. My high school principal, no longer in the ministry. So I just took you through every one of my leaders from seventh grade into college who failed me. You know, sometimes you look at that and you say, well, you know what? If they can't live this life, then why should I? And I learned something when I was 19 years old that kind of shook me a little bit and said, you know what? You had better stop living your faith off somebody else, because when you do that, that's exactly what happens. When I live my life off Brother Woosley and Brother Woosley fails me, guess what? Then there goes my faith. Be careful. People are going to fail you. They're human. People are going to say things that your leaders, your parents may fail you. I mean, I've had some good people that I've known throughout my life who wound up getting divorced, and I think to myself, man, why in the world did that happen? I remember that was my first kind of knock there with faith. Hang on a second. Where's Brother so-and-so? Where's brother so-and-so? What? He's son. Man, you mean that guy that told me is now divorced? Where is that person? Listen to me. You will someday face that crisis where people that you have great faith in and people that you love and people who love you may fail you. Listen to me. Your faith ought to be your faith, and it ought to stay your faith even if they fail you. Second, brush up with faith here. I'm not a good girl youth pastor. I'm just not. You girls, it's a good thing you're not. A good thing I'm not your youth pastor, because I'm not a good girl youth pastor. I try to be, but I always wind up saying the wrong things. My girls are always crying. So, shut up, get out of here. You know, I can work with the fellas a lot better. And so, I had a young man several years ago who I'm a junior high and senior high. We don't have ours separate, and so I'm always running and gunning. But I had a young man who, at sixth grade, he started coming to the activities. He started hanging around. And we're very busy with our young people. We got them Wednesday night. We got them Sunday. Got them Sunday afternoon. They're with us. And we always got a lot of activities. I do a lot of trips. I just got back from a trip 2 weeks ago. I took a group of young men to, we went hiking in 15 below weather in the Badlands of South Dakota. So anyhow, it was crazy. And we do a lot of trips and so on like that. But young man, he's just one of those cool kids. You know, he's just a cool kid. He's a very athletic kid and a very funny kid and kid with a great personality. And he just started tagging along with me everywhere I went. That was great. Kid got into seventh, eighth grade. I realized he liked wrestling, and he became a wrestler, a very, very good wrestler. And he talked to his mom and dad, and mom and dad took him to a wrestling academy up in Naperville, Illinois. Kid became quite the wrestler and got into high school. And man, the kid was just super strong. And he just would latch on to me. I mean, it was just anywhere Brother Ricky went, you would see this young man. He got into high school and he'd start driving me around. And if I'd go out of town to preach or something, he'd drive. And anywhere I'd go, he was there. And he's a tough kid. I remember one time I was preaching in church and this one kid kept talking. He told him, he said, "Be quiet." And the kid said, "Shut up, blankety blank, who you think you are?" Right smack in the middle of my service, this boy grabbed the other boy, hauled off, he cocked, and bop, and just pounded the kid, blew the kid's nose to pieces. Now, he shouldn't have done that, but it was fun to watch, all right? Amen? And so he went on. You know what? He graduated from City Baptist. Man, it was great. The kid was going to Bible college, and man, he did real well and started working in ministry, did real well. And now for about 7 years, this kid and I, he was my closest. I mean, he just everything. I mean, I'd show up to my pulpit on Sunday morning, there'd be coffee there and it'd be from him. And he was dating a good young lady and so on. And then he broke up with that young lady. Do you know more young men commit suicide over the breakup of a girlfriend than anything? So he broke up with this girl, and he couldn't handle it, and he couldn't take it. So he went into a hotel room. He got a gun, put the pillow up by his head, took the gun, and he blew his brains away and left a note to the girl saying, "You were my everything. I can't live without you," and he died. He probably ought to be interning, probably ought to be ready to take my place someday. He's not. 22 years old. He's dead. Man, you know that shock that was to my faith? You know how when I found out that night that boy had killed himself and I went over to his parents' house, do you understand that for the next 3 days I was numb? I was absolutely numb. And I had some arguing with God. And I had a lot of questions for God. And I for 3 days, I got to be honest with you, I wasn't real spiritual for 3 days. So the first one was my leaders. The second one was somebody close and dear, near to me. You could say a friend. And man, I just, for 3 days, if there's such thing as instant depression, I went into instant depression. Over that. Was I angry at God? No. I just didn't want to talk I don't want to express myself to God. I felt like God really let me down. Let me tell you number three. Number three, I'm newly married. My wife and I get married. I'm working downtown. She's a nurse. My wife's a very bright lady. My wife has two college degrees. She has a degree in math. She has a nursing degree. She plays the piano. She plays the guitar. She writes music. She's recorded CDs. She's written medical journals. A very, very bright lady. We get married. She works at a pediatric hospital, largest pediatric hospital in Chicago, Children's Memorial Hospital in downtown. And so we get married, and life is good. We travel. We go on cruises. We have a great time. Then it's time to start our family, so let's go. I come from a family of six. She only comes from a family of one. I have 31 nephews and nieces. She's got five, four of which attend Hammond Baptist Grade School. And so we're excited, and it's time now, and we're going to start our family. Well, we're told by doctors that you cannot have children. So we say, okay, well, you can't have children. All right, let's try. So we've got good insurance, and we've got good people we know. And so we go to the best doctors in Chicago. We go to the best fertility specialists and say, okay, you know what? Emmanuel, we do everything. And a doctor comes in and says, I've never seen a healthier couple have more negative results. And so no child. You know, and during that time, I'm kind of looking up to God saying, God, you know, God, you really have a sense of humor. God, you have kind of a warped sense of humor. My wife is a children's nurse. I work with teens. Our days and nights are filled with kids, and then we go home to an empty house. I have a beautiful home. I live in South Hammond, right on the Munster border. And we got a house that's probably a little too big for us. But it was built, or it was bought with the plan of filling it with kids. You know, I always wanted to be that dad that, you know, I know I'd be like the dad that'd be like, you know, the kid would be involved in everything. And, you know, I would hire like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger to train my kid to do everything. You know, I'd bring in Derek Jeter to teach him how to, you know, that's the kind of dad I'd be. I'd be like a super dad. And I love ministry. I run the bus route. And I thought, man, it'd be cool. Soon as they hit 3 years old and they're potty trained, boom, they're on that bus with dad on Sunday morning, Sunday night. And man, when they're 12, they're driving that bus. I don't care. You know, and so that time goes through and nothing happens there. Then we said, okay, we're going to adopt. So, okay. So if money wasn't an issue, we got the money and we went to a agency and we filled out all the paperwork. And I remember we finally got a call and said, we have a child. We have a newborn child that we're going to deliver to you a day after it's born. It's great. So my wife and I, we get put all this money together. We put all this money into this account, and we pay all these lawyers, and we have a date that we're supposed to go. And we're going to meet with the lawyers. We're going to sign some papers. And then the following, I think, week or two, the baby's due, and we're going to become parents. So we get in our car. We have an appointment with the lawyer. We go up to Bolingbrook, Illinois. We drive. We're excited. We're so enthused. Wow, we're going to be parents. We're going to have a child. We didn't know if it was a boy or a girl. We didn't care. We didn't want to know. And so we got there, got in the car. We go to the lawyer's office. We walk in. We're pumped. We're excited. Walked in, and the receptionist looks at us like somebody died. And she said, Mr. Torres? I said, yeah. So we have a 10 o'clock appointment. Oh, okay. She goes back and waits about 10 minutes, come back and says, Lucille was our lawyer. Lucille needs to talk to you, but she's not here. I said, what do you mean she's not here? We have a signing here at 10 o'clock. And I said, she needs to talk to you by phone. So she takes it back in the phone. Says, you didn't hear? And I said, no, we didn't hear. Nobody from my office contacted you? She said, no. I said, no one. She said, that mom backed out. The adoption is not going to happen. I remember, you know what? You get in that car, and it may not mean much to you. You get in that car, and you drive the 30 minutes back home, and it's dead silence. Because then you again have another shock of your faith. All that money down the drain. No child, just hopelessness. So what do? You get in that car, and it's very quiet, and you drive back. back home. And you get in the house and you go to separate rooms and you cry and you deal with your faith and you try to deal with that shock once again in your faith. All three times we were able to recover. Why? Because our faith was strong enough. Our faith was strong enough. You know what? You're looking at one of the happiest men in the world. I have no regrets. Yeah, there's good things about having children. There's, you know, bad things about having children. I don't got to wait on nobody. I don't got to change. Yeah, I just get up and I'm up and out of the house within 10 minutes. You know, I have to. There's good things and bad things. Those are three times in my life when my faith was shaken, and three times, young people, I had to overcome that huge monster obstacle and that huge mountain of doubt. And listen, it's coming your way. It's coming your way. And I'll be done with saying this. If it's your faith and you've grounded it and you've built it and you've made it firm and you've made it sure, you'll be all right. You'll be all right. If it's not your faith, you will drop out, or you will opt out, or you will zone out. Get ready. You know why, as a young person, you ought to have a walk with God? You know why, as a young person, you ought to seek God? You know why, as a young person, you ought to try to do everything to have a relationship with God? Because the day is going to come when your faith is going to be tested. Sometimes, you know what, young people? Those knocks against your faith are pretty brutal. Your child may die. Your husband may pass. Your mother may get cancer. Your dad may be killed. Your best friend may fall away, and you'll be okay if it's your faith. And if it's not your faith, you're going to be grasping. Help me. What do I do here? God, where are you? God never moved. He's always there. I've enjoyed these 3 days with you, but I don't want 3 days of my talking and blabbing to go without you making some decision. Make it your faith. Own your faith. Build your faith. Care for your faith. Don't worry about anybody else's. Yours. I'm going to ask you to bow your head and close your eyes. I'm going to ask Brother Woosley to come and close out chapel. Every head bowed, every eye closed.